ESG has exploded into compliance and business consciousness. Join Tom Fox, the voice of compliance, on the ESG Report and learn about sustainability risks, opportunities, and issues that business leaders and compliance professionals need to know about regarding ESG.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox back for another episode. And you're in for a treat today because we are going to learn lessons from both American and English football. So Gareth Evans. Gareth, first of all, welcome and thank you so much for taking the time to visit with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tom. Looking forward to it.
I forgot to ask you, who's your...
Unfortunately, it's Everton. Blue half of Liverpool, and we're not doing very well these days.
I'm an LFC guy.
There we go. That's arch rival.
When asked why an American is an LFC guy, I say, the first English girl I dated was from Liverpool. And every really? Englishman goes, oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Completely get it.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, incredible result yesterday.
Unbelievable. And my current wife, also English, is a Man U fan. So we had some fun with that.
That's brilliant.
We'll get to football in a moment. Gareth, could you tell us a little bit about your professional background?
Yeah, sure, Tom. Trained as an environmental scientist, actually. Always planned on being a fast jet pilot with the Air Force. So I did what I enjoyed doing through college because I didn't necessarily think I needed a vocation per se. But I decided against the Air Force, and the environmental science degree came in handy. After traveling around the world, the oil and gas industry was really booming. And I stopped in Calgary, Canada, and I ended up cleaning up old oil and gas well sites for many years. And that took me then all around the world. Once I had that experience, I really enjoyed leading teams in remote areas under fairly stressful conditions. And I got the opportunity to go off to Iraq for 2 years and do liability assessments post the Second Gulf War prior to the oil and gas industry moving into the region. And then really then needed exposure, non-technical aspects of my career. So then got into leading large consulting businesses, doing strategy, sales, commercials, pursuits. And this was all for a major energy engineering firm called Worley, one of the largest energy engineering firms in the world. And they specialize in oil and gas, mining, energy transition related activities. So got to travel around the world with them for 15 years, got to do lots of different roles, build my career, build my network. So no complaints.
Were you part of the folks that dealt with the fires in Kuwait in Gulf War One?
So that was a little bit before my time, but they were still looking for people to come in and help clean up that area when I was in the Middle East. So yeah, it created a lot of impacts, and I still, to this day, I don't think it's been fully dealt with.
So what's your current role, Gareth?
So today I'm the CEO of Vector, and Vector is the energy transition platform.
So what is an energy transition platform?
Yeah. As everyone's feeling a bit of pain these days, energy costs are going up all around the world. We're seeing our centralized grid, which we've relied on for the last 100 years, and it's done a really good job up until now, but it's now becoming harder to maintain, harder to manage. It's not dealing with our current day needs. And so our reliability is decreasing. And meanwhile, a lot of businesses are making emission reduction commitments, and there's a lot of public pressure, capital market pressure to do. And so ways that you can achieve all three of those things is with an on-site energy system. So generating and storing energy right at your business location where you need it. But this is complex, and business leaders aren't sure where to start or what to do about it, who to turn to. And so our energy transition platform allows them to really simply and effectively understand where they are today, how much energy am I using, how much am I spending, what's my emission profile, where do I want to get to, what are my options, configure the solution for them. And then we've got a marketplace of thousands of suppliers that they can have bid on their projects and ensure that they get the right solution at the right price at the right time.
So when you sit down with a new customer or potential customer, who are you talking to? Are you talking to the CEO? You're talking to the CFO? You're talking to the CTO? A combination of all of the above or the board?
Yep, all the above, actually. You know, obviously, the board isn't making buying decisions, but getting sponsorship in from board members is really powerful. Typically, we like to work with CEOs, CFOs, because they're the ones who are really being held accountable for bottom line metrics. You can actually be sustainable and profitable these days with these systems. So having people who are thinking strategically about the long-term sustainability of their business and also ensuring that they are maintain and grow their profitability and have a differentiated position in their market. And then through to sustainability managers, facility managers, plant managers, anyone who's related to running an operation, money, emissions, and or resilience, security.
Could it also be head of sustainability or chief of ESG, whatever the corporation might call that position internally?
Exactly. Yeah, sustainability leaders, ESG leaders, as well as environment, health, and safety, EHS leadership. Yeah.
So it sounds like you're able to bring not only a consulting, but really a turnaround solution for companies who are even at the start of this journey.
Yeah, it's a fully technology-enabled platform, actually, Tom. So no consulting. We've automated all the consulting work. I came out of Worley, my previous organization, as they saw that what we're building has the ability to disrupt the whole front end of the market. So we use technology to do all the assessment, the baselining, the optimization of the energy solution. And then on the back end, we've created essentially a brokering relationship between the person who wants to buy a solution and the suppliers who want to sell it. But we do that through technology.
So I continually have talks with people about ESG, and I live in the great state of Texas, and they tend to view ESG through a different set of lens than I do. And what I see it is a business process. And it's a business process with an E and an S and a G. But for me, the power is you have one person or a group of people, perhaps, with oversight into wide and diverse areas of a corporation, which no one had oversight into before. And what I heard you describe was a component that allows a company to look at its own energy consumption and see where it is, where it's going, where there might be room for greater efficiency. But I also heard you talk about purchasing and purchasing energy in a cost-effective way through a marketplace with a variety of vendors who could supply both quantity and quality of energy at a price that a company could use. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yes, definitely. And I think being in Texas, I've got lots of friends and clients there as well. And I think I see a lot in the press right now around the politicians getting up in arms against banks who have ESG commitments and things like that. And I think the reality is we're going to need oil and gas for a really long time. This is a multi-decade transition. It's not something that we can change overnight. So we do need to really adapt with purpose. And there's ways of doing that and ensuring that we do drive that sustainable outcome, but it is also profitable. And I think that's what I want business leaders to embrace, is this is actually really good for your business if you do it right. And then to your point, there's a huge amount of options. There's a huge amount of complexity. How do you cut through all that noise and ensure you get the right deal? Because if you're self-financing these systems, they're multi-million dollar deals. So you need to have the right internal checks and balances and compliance requirements to decide what you want to procure and build. And then how do you go to market and find the right suppliers to do that? But there are options to have someone else come in and finance it, build it, own it, operate it, and just sell you the energy back. And the energy will typically be cheaper than what you pay the utility today. So that becomes a real win-win.
Let me see if I can pick up on the energy industry specifically, because I advocate that greater sustainability means your company's reserves will last a lot longer. And you may have gamed out, we have reserves 2050. If you move to a more sustainable business model, that might last 2070, or heaven forbid, the turn of the century. And I've never quite understood why energy companies don't embrace this as a way to lengthen out their own raw materials, which of course is petroleum in the ground or whatever source they're using. Are you having those conversations with clients or potential clients?
I wouldn't say at that deep of a level, actually, Tom. And I think you raise a really good point. We're certainly talking to them about, here's how much it's costing you to run your operation, and here's the cost of an outage. That's something that a lot of businesses aren't planning in or monitoring or even putting a dollar amount against. And there's some crazy stats out there. US businesses alone lost $150 billion in downtime as a result of power outages in last year alone. They're the sort of conversations we're having, but I like your angle of understand how to play the economics of the life cycle of your assets and manage how you use them and when you use them and time it right in the cycles to monetize them in the highest way possible.
Let me step back and ask about the analysis your technology provides, because many of the listeners to this podcast are either in compliance or sustainability where documentation is critical. documentation in their 10K reporting, documentation if a regulator comes knocking, such as Securities and Exchange Commission, or or potentially even a lawsuit if their claims are fraudulent. Are you able to provide that sort of documentation for whatever decision a company might make to show how they got to the place they made the decision and the basis for the decision going forward?
Yep. That's definitely part of the attraction is there's lots and lots of variables to consider here. So you can imagine an energy solution alone, which there's multiple technologies, solar, battery storage, wind, gas, diesel, hydrogen, electric vehicles. You're buying energy from different utilities in different locations today, depending on where your facilities are. Every location's got a different solar potential, a different fuel price. So there's literally hundreds of thousands of variables that can impact the optimal solution. Meanwhile, most companies don't truly know where they're really just baselining their situation. So that's certainly what we support them with is let's line where you're at today, really understand where you're, what you're doing, how you're doing it. That can then be reported. You can really understand where am I overspending? Where am I over emitting against my targets? How am I on track to achieve whatever targets have been set? Now, a lot of people are setting net zero commitments by certain dates. And there was an Accenture report recently that said, I think it 0.7% of companies are on track to hit those targets. So it's not a good state of play. And then we help customers to then really determine, here's where I'm at, here's where I want to be, what are my options for getting there, and making it very auditable, traceable, where's each project in its life cycle, what are the next steps, what are the bottlenecks, who's the decision maker. So yeah, all that key.
I'd like to turn now to some of the things I saw on your website, specifically some blog posts, which I thought were a ton of fun. Perhaps written tongue-in-cheek, but a lot of wisdom and truth in those. And coming out of the pandemic, perhaps the most prescient one thing I heard about the pandemic was the following. We've moved from disaster recovery to business resilience to businesses. You wrote a blog where you used a phrase, I have to read this because it's the original Latin, prima datio malorum. Anyway, what that means is planning for the worst. And first of all, I'd never seen the Latin phrase, but you cited several different examples. First, last year, I think it was wildfires in California. This year, California's replaced that with mass flooding, snowfalls. In Texas, over the past 2 years, 2 years ago, we had the biggest cold snap since the 1890s. 5 years ago, we had the 1,000-year flood with Hurricane Harvey, which is just means to say that events that, I don't want to say were unplanned or unknown, but more dramatic events are occurring. And why is planning for the worst such a critical exercise in Europe?
Especially with energy has become literally the lifeblood of everything we do. We power everything in our lives with it. And at a business level, even more, it's super critical. It impacts our safety and security right down to our operational ability to deliver what we promise to our customers and our stakeholders. And so without having reliable, resilient, secure energy, you can go out of business, or your operations shut down, or you're having to pay huge amounts of money to get them restarted, or you're losing product because you've lost your refrigerators. You know, whatever the scenario, unless you're thinking about that, because like you say, these situations are becoming more frequent. And even if they weren't, the infrastructure that provides our energy is getting older, so it's more vulnerable anyway. And so for all these reasons, energy reliability, resilience, security is reducing. And if we're not thinking about it, we're going to lose money. We're going to lose customers. We're going to lose stock price. All these are fairly significant impacts. And there are solutions for it today. And it's important that we're thinking about what is the worst case scenario? What does it cost us? How do we factor that into our decision making? And when we think about on-site energy for our customers, these systems, they may be a couple of million dollars, but one outage can actually cost them way more than that. And these things pay for themselves pretty quick. We actually spoke to a customer the other day and we did an assessment for them. And without even considering resilience, they could save $400,000 a year in energy costs alone. So then if you stack on resilience capabilities, emission reduction, now that you can market yourselves as being clean, you can brand yourself, you can sell that story. You go from worst case scenario planning to actually being in a really favorable position. And I think that's what's super exciting about the space.
I absolutely agree. For those listening to this podcast, it's probably obvious to now that you are somewhat from east of Texas. But you wrote a really interesting blog post on lessons learned from the Super Bowl for energy transition. So I was wondering if you could tell us about what you saw at this year's Super Bowl that you thought could be a lesson learned, and then maybe any lessons learned from English football that we could take in energy transition.
Yeah. So the Super Bowl, I've come to really enjoy what I consider to be called American football, but NFL. And the Super Bowl is obviously the highlight. And so I always like thinking about analogies when we think about business and energy. And for me, the Super Bowl was exciting because it got me thinking about what do they do? How do they do it? How do these teams perform at such a high level all the time? And for me, it was, you've got to create a game plan, first of all. You've got to understand who's your opponent, what tactics do I need, what team do I need on the field. So having that game plan of where do we want to go, how are we going to get there, and someone leading it and driving it is critical. Energy transition, I feel like there's a lot of knee-jerk reactions going on around the world. We need to have a game plan, and we need to adapt with purpose to get it done. You have to have a really good team in the NFL. You know, you have your superstars, but you have to have a really good team around it. What I love about sports in particular is it's usually the young, hot talent that's the center of the puzzle piece, and then you position experience and maturity and around that individual to allow them to perform. I almost feel in business we've gone the other way, where we take the most experienced people and they're the superstar. So I think there's a lot of lessons we can apply from that, is how do we bring more young talent into the industry and get them firing on all cylinders super quickly. Obviously, NFL teams innovate, adapt all the time. So almost every play, that's what's very different to English soccer in the NFL. Every play is being analyzed on the fly, in the moment. How do you adapt? How do you innovate? How do you change your game plan to make sure that you're meeting the needs of to win the game? And I think with the energy transition, it's the same. This is a dynamic environment. Fuel prices are changing, grid structures, commercial models. How do we ensure that we're constantly on top of that and we're adapting and we're making the best decisions? And then I'd say preparation and perseverance is probably the biggest one, is being able to stick with the game plan. Even when you get punched in the face and things get hard, how do you keep going? How do you stay true to the mission and the objectives? So I think for me, the NFL brought some of those real key factors out of it. And there's a lot of transferables to business and the energy transition. I think when I think about English soccer, I think the biggest difference is the managers almost set the game plan at the start of the game, but then it's really up to the players to adapt on the fly on the pitch, because you don't have that, you know, stop, start, change of plays. So you really have to have a very strong game plan and tactics. And you have to have then some really great leaders on the pitch who are able to read the game and make those on the fly changes if needed. And I'd say the biggest lesson respecting to the energy transition is supporting teams like Everton. For me, that's like procuring the wrong supplier to come and build your system. You settle for a life of misery. If you're going to build an energy system, you've got it for the next 20, 30 years. I supported Everton because my dad did at a very young age, and I think we've won one trophy in my entire life. And so we want to make sure that business leaders are making the best decisions possible and they're not left with the lemon and wondering how they ended up getting to where they are today. Yeah.
Good. Let me ask you to turn down the road a little bit to 2030, which I'm going to boldly call mid-century. And where do you see energy migration down the road into 2030 and then literally beyond? Is this a growth industry? Do you see companies embracing what I've heard you describe as really a holistic approach to this, not looking at individual parts, but really putting it all together?
Yeah, I think like we touched on a little bit earlier, is this is going to be a multi-decade play. And so the energy transition is really just getting going. And I think anyone who feels like they're missing the boat, there's a long road ahead. I think 2030 is going to be on us before we know it. There's actually a lot of companies who have made emission reduction targets by then. So I think we're going to see a huge amount of activity in the next 6 or 7 years to get there, because these projects don't happen. But I think when I think about the future of energy, I think about it being from this top-down approach of utility generates power, transmits it to our homes and businesses, and we're passive consumers of energy. And we have no control over where it comes from, what it costs, how it was generated, how clean it is, to a more prosumer-based. Us as individuals in our homes and as business leaders, being able to generate and store our own energy. And then having, leveraging the Web3 future where it's more distributed, it's more secure, and having the ability to actually monetize your assets in a completely different way. So being able to give the distribution operator the ability to turn off pieces of your equipment when you don't need them and being compensated for that, or being able to sell your carbon credits or trade them with other people through blockchain technologies. So I think that's the future, and that's it creates a lot of opportunity for everyone outside of just the world of building these systems. How do you ensure they speak to each other in the right way? How do you ensure they transact in the right way? How do you ensure that there is an entire market that grows with that new energy?
Gareth, unfortunately, we are near the end of our time for this episode. Yep. But before we leave, I wanted to ask you if our listeners wanted any more information on yourself, on Vetco, or really any of the topics we've touched on today, what would be the best place or places for them to go?
Yep. Best place to learn about Vetco is our website. So www.vecta.com. And then for me personally, LinkedIn is the best place to hang out, follow what we're up to. And ping me anytime if you've got any questions or you're excited about the industry or want to learn more.
Gareth, I wanted to thank you again. I've really enjoyed our chance to visit, and I hope we can continue this conversation.
Yeah, cheers, Tom. That was great. Thanks.
This is Tom Fox again. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the ESG Report. The ESG Report is a production of the Compliance Podcast Network.